Welcome to season 3 of the Savage Pats podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle, and this episode is special. Man, it's special because Georgia football is finally back. It's special because it's our first episode as part of UGASports.com's Rivals Podcast Network, where UGA's Rivals team is putting out new content every day for dog fans. And it's special because Georgia's all-time leading scorer, Rodrigo Blankenship, is joining the show to take dog fans behind the goggles in an exclusive interview. But before we get to that, I do want to tell you all about the folks enabling us to make this show happen, and those folks are our friends at Southern Brewing Company. Southern Brewing Company is passionate about crafting traditional and wild beers with local character while celebrating family, community, and Southern culture. And they make the perfect brews for Georgia Bulldog fans with beers like the Larry Munson-inspired Hobnail, as well as the Red and Black. In addition to making the perfect beers for Georgia football fans, this football season, Southern Brewing Company is creating the perfect game day atmosphere for dog fans seeking to tailgate and watch the games with Dog Nation. Bring your chairs, your tents, and tailgate supplies on Saturday because the Athens location is showing UGA versus Arkansas on the big screen outside. No grills or outside alcohol are allowed. Southern Brewing Company will have all the beer you need. I do want to mention that masks will be required inside the tap room and in the restrooms, as Southern Brewing has committed itself to establishing a true tailgating environment while also maintaining a commitment to the well-being of its customers. I know they appreciate your cooperation and understanding in that department. To learn more about Southern Brewing Company and its upcoming events, please visit www.sobrewco.com. That's www.sobrewco.com. Athens born, Southern made, Southern Brewing Company. Please drink responsibly and only if you're of age. We've got a great show for you coming up. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man. Mono and mono.
He definitely 6 hour miles, me and myself. As close as we have right now to rope on.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, you know, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job of bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust the Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I was famous. He was onside.
Everybody respects his specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best 2 teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to a new season of the Savage Pads podcast. Lou Groza Award winner Rodrigo Blankenship is on the line. Rodrigo, we are pumped to have you, man. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Absolutely. There's so much to talk about here with a new season for Georgia kicking off this week. You're our first guest. But I want to first catch dog fans up on you and your career. Since we last saw you in Athens, you moved to Indianapolis, became starting kicker for the Colts, and most recently hit all 6 of your kicks in the Colts' first win of the season. So professionally, things are looking fantastic. But on a personal level, Rod, how's your transition to the NFL been, and what do you miss most about college?
The transition definitely has been, it's definitely been a challenge, and it's definitely been different. This off season and this transition phase from, you know, the end of my college career to, the start of the season has definitely looked a little bit different. Obviously, with the virus and everything that's gone on, this whole process has looked a lot different. Had to do, we didn't get to have our pro day. We didn't get to have individual workouts, after the draft, we weren't able to report to our teams, and we were just training, kind of having to stay put at home. And so I spent a lot of extra time in Athens that I guess I normally wouldn't have,
mm-hmm.
You know, just trying to train and stay sharp and to be ready to come in and compete in camp. You know, so this whole process and this transition has definitely looked a lot different. You know, and obviously stepping into camp, you know, came into, you know, a huge competition,
right.
You know, as I had had in the past at Georgia, in my first couple years kicking, I had had some competitions there as well. So, you know, kind of stepped into the fire and had to go in and compete, to try and earn a position and earn a job. So it's definitely been a challenge, and definitely this whole transition has, looked very different compared to a normal season, but, you know, I've just tried to take everything one day at a time and just tried to put my best foot forward one day at a time. And, you know, that approach and mentality has paid off so far. So we're just hoping that I can continue to do that.
Absolutely, Rod. And you mentioned that kicking competition in Indianapolis. Word on the street is that the night before roster cuts were made, you played with Legos to relax a little bit. Is this part of your routine in preparing for nerve-wracking situations?
Not yet. it was just, you know, it was just something that I did to try and just, you know, kind of take my mind off of things. You know, after that last day of the competition, you know, we were just waiting for that day to come, and you know, I was just kind of waiting to receive some news one way or another. There wasn't really a whole lot else to do except just kind of wait. And so, you know, I at that point I had done everything that I could up to that point to try and make a case for myself. And, mm-hmm. and so there was, you know, there was no point in worrying about it at that point. So I just wanted to do something, anything to try and take my mind off of it and, you know, just have somewhere to go with my mind and my thoughts. And so I just decided, you know, might as well, you know, build some Lego sets or whatever, just have something to take my mind off of it and, you know, just kind of be at peace and just have something to do to relax. So, yeah, so that was what I did. It isn't part of any routine as of now.
Okay.
But you know, it's definitely, you know, an outlet or an avenue that I have. You know, if I needed it. So just something to kind of take my mind off it and to go to a happy place, and you know, I could do that.
Yeah. So what Lego sets take you to a happy place? What are some of your favorites? And what were you working on ahead of that roster cut day?
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff that I have collected over the years, because I started collecting when I was a little kid.
Wow.
I think back in like 2006 or 2007, you know, so it's been, I've liked them and have built them and collected them for a very long time. And
yeah,
most of it is, Star Wars stuff.
Oh yeah.
I'm a pretty big Star Wars guy, along with Marvel and Transformers. You know, I'm a really kind of a, you know, geeky in that regard, you know, liking a lot of that kind of like sci-fi stuff. And so a lot of them are Star Wars sets, but, a lot of the Star Wars sets that are available right now are, bigger sets. And I didn't want to do that because at the time I was still at the, you know, at a hotel, and I wasn't really going to have a good place to put it or be able to transport it easily when, you know, eventually I had to get out of the hotel. So, I got a little Ferrari buildable car, that was, I think, maybe like 250 pieces or something like that. It was like $20 or $25, something like that. Just something like much smaller and much more manageable. So that was the one that I was working on the night before.
That is very interesting. So some players get drafted and buy a Ferrari. Rodrigo makes the team and gets a Ferrari Lego set. Have you ever had other players, even at Georgia maybe, that shared your interest in Legos or that you enjoyed that with?
I can't think of any teammates off the top of my head that were into Legos specifically, mm-hmm. but I do know that Jay Camarda, punter, that was my roommate for games the last two years when I was there,
yeah.
is also a pretty big Star Wars guy. So
okay.
So we have that in common, at least on the Star Wars side of things. He is a pretty big Star Wars guy himself, and so we have a lot of fun you know, fanboying about, you know, all the Star Wars stuff going on, the movies, TV shows, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I was a big Star Wars guy. I was on Spike Squad back in the day, and I painted like Darth Maul. But I know Chris Conley was another Star Wars guy at Georgia, and I think Jacob Eason was, and he's there with you in Indianapolis. Have you guys reconnected up there?
Yes. Yeah. Jacob as well is a pretty big Star Wars guy. He is also another one that comes to mind. And yes, we have reconnected. He's like, you know, he's like two or three lockers down from me in the locker room, you know. So, you know, I see him, talk to him pretty much every day. You know, we get to talk, and it's nice to have a connection and to have a familiar place, since we're both you know, somewhere new now. It's definitely nice to have a familiar face close by.
Yeah, I bet it is. Well, we've talked about Legos. We haven't talked about Blanco yet. Are you still a rapper by the name of Blanco?
I think I'm retired for the time being. it was really fun to make that song, and I had a lot of fun with it, and it definitely, you know, made me appreciate, you know, the work that goes into creating music. You know, because I was trying to make that song late at night, you know, after practice is over, after, you know, if I, you know, get done with practice and get done with all my post-practice treatment, I get done with my film, I get done with my homework, then if I have time after all that stuff, then I'd hit up the other guys that helped me to make it and be like, hey, like, you know, can we go knock out some work? So, you know, it's definitely some late nights involved with, you know, kind of making that happen. And it made me appreciate, you know, the work that goes into creating music, just, you know, having that perspective on it. But I don't think I'm actively, you know, making new music. if anyone's wondering, I'm not actively making anything new. I think the only thing that could maybe, you know, get me to do anything like that again would be if Wix wanted to have me on one of his songs. You know, he was kind of the one that really kind of, you know, got me interested into looking into that when he kind of, you know, kind of went viral a little bit after the Rose Bowl, when he was doing some freestyle rapping, and his video blew up on Twitter. And, you know, and now he's making some music of his own that's coming out on like iTunes and Spotify and stuff. So he's, you know, he's pursuing that dream. And, you know, as far as I can tell, is doing really well. You know, so maybe if he wanted to have me on a song, that I think that'd probably be about it. So outside of that, I'm probably going to be done at this point.
Yeah. Well, and that's Wix Patton, for those of you listening and aren't familiar, former Georgia player, who was on that Rose Bowl team with Rodrigo. Now you say Wix is the only thing that could get you back in the game. I know you and Quavo have linked up a few times. There's some legendary photos of you at the practice facility, on the sideline at the Rose Bowl. Do you and Quavo stay in touch? And could we expect a single if he were to reach out to you?
Yeah, I mean, if he wanted to do something, then, you know, I'm all in. he may not. I have to imagine it probably be more of like a visual type of feature, you know, maybe if he was doing a new music video or something and he wanted to have me, you know, I would be all in for that. I would love to do something like that. Yeah. But, you know, I don't think that my musical talents are quite on a level that, that Quavo would be looking out for me. But, you know, if you want to do like a music video or anything like that, yeah, I would love to be a part of that. But yeah, you know, in the couple times that I've been able to interact with him, you know, he's awesome. He's pretty cool dude. One of the coolest dudes, you know, you'll ever meet. You know, and yeah, I would love to do something like that if he wanted to.
Wow. Well, Rod, you're clearly very comfortable in your own skin, and you earn the respect of your coaches, teammates, and fans at University of Georgia, in part because of just your performance, but also in part because of just who you are. But you're in a whole new environment now. You're around new guys, and people may not necessarily understand the legend of Rodrigo Blankenship. Do you feel that your NFL teammates respect the specs?
That's an interesting question. You know, I think Jacob Jacob probably does for sure.
Yeah.
You know, just from having that previous connection with him. But, you know, outside of that, you know, it kind of feels like starting all over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of feels like going back to the 2016 season, you know, leading up to that 2016 season where, you know, I redshirted in 2015 and then, you know, was in a kicking competition over the summer going into that 2016 year. And, you know, and I actually didn't win the job, you know, going into that season, and wasn't the starter, at least for field goals, until I think our fourth game of the season. You know, and so just like every single day, you're trying to go out and prove yourself and prove that you belong and that you deserve to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's kind of what it feels like all over again now, where, you know, I have to go out every day and practice and prove, you know, that I can be the guy, prove that I can be the team that, you know, that this team should have, and then, you know, have to go out every Sunday and try and prove that, you know, that I deserve to have the job, that I deserve to be the guy. So, you know, I don't think it's there yet, but, you know, hopefully I can just continue to, you know, put good days together and continue to perform to the standard that this team is expecting. And then, you know, maybe after some time, then maybe that can come.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're certainly off to a good start in that department. And speaking of respecting the specs, a lot of fans don't know your whole story there with the goggles and how that came to be. At what point did you start wearing the goggles during football games? And did you ever try contacts?
Yeah, so I did try contacts a long time ago. I think in seventh grade, I think it was when I had to first start wearing glasses, you know, just to correct my vision. I had to just start wearing glasses, period, I think back in seventh grade. And then started wearing sports glasses, I think, in my sophomore year of high school.
Okay.
Because it was actually for basketball. Up until that point,
uh-huh,
I would just wear my regular glasses under my helmet to play football and soccer, and I would wear one of those little croakies, I think is what it's called, the little thing, you know, that you can attach to your glasses so they don't slide off your face when you're
mm-hmm,
playing. So I would use one of those for soccer, and I would just wear my regular glasses under my helmet for football up through my freshman year. And then going into my sophomore year, after that football season, I tried out for basketball. And at that point, I was like, okay, there's no way I can stick with these regular glasses, because, you know, if, you know, a rebound comes off your head, or, you know, deflected pass, something like that, the basketball is going to ruin your glasses. So
right.
That was what got me to wear sports glasses. And then after that, then I just kept wearing sports glasses the rest of the way. You know, when soccer season came around that spring, and then going into my junior year, playing football, I just continued to wear them because they're, you know, they're more durable and they can handle the impact better. So I just continued to wear them, and then got to UGA and they got me some more team color appropriate ones. And then, you know, just kind of never looked back after that.
Yeah. Well, do you feel that you're starting a movement where more players are embracing wearing specs on the field, or do you think the specs will always be unique to you? Kind of like how the unibrow is to Anthony Davis or the beard to James Harden.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if the specs are on the same level as the brow. I mean, you know, Anthony Davis is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's something that you know, definitely I think has become synonymous with his image and his branding. You know, and I would like to think that, you know, specs maybe, you know, synonymous at some point with my name, my image and branding. But, you know, I would want anybody that, you know, has a vision problem that needs vision correction, I would hope that anybody would feel comfortable to be able to wear specs and, you know, just rock them and own them and, you know, incorporate them into their, you know, into their being and into their personality. You know, there's nothing wrong with wearing them. You know, I don't know
mm-hmm.
what percentage of Americans across the country need some kind of correction to their vision, but it's incredibly high percentage, and so there shouldn't be anything wrong with wearing glasses or wearing sports glasses to compete. You know, if it helps you to see better and it helps you to perform better, then, you know, I say go for it, regardless of whether it's contacts or if it's sports glasses. I feel like you should go for it, and it'll, you know, help you be a better athlete and be a better competitor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would imagine that any young Georgia fan who watched you that needs that probably feels much more comfortable. So I think you're kind of paving the way in the goggle community in sports. Now, Rod, we've covered the story of the goggles, your time in the NFL, but I know our listeners want to hear more on your time at Georgia. As we all know, you became one of the greatest and most loved Georgia Bulldogs in your 5 years in Athens, so much so that you kind of became a legend. And like any legend, it's hard to differentiate between myth and truth when you hear about Rodrigo Blankenship. So I need you to clear the air on something. Legend has it you chose to walk on at Georgia instead of taking a scholarship from Georgia's rival Florida. Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
There was a lot of, you know, coaching turnover at the end of my senior season. You know, and that happens every year. You know, there's some coaching turnover. You know, among all the, you know, pretty much every conference. You know, there's some coaching turnover everywhere. And so, I did get offered very late in the recruiting process after I had already committed to Georgia. And,
okay.
You know, even when I got it, my heart and my mind had already been set on coming to UGA. And so the decision just became, you know, pretty clear pretty quickly that I wanted to stick it out with UGA. And, you know, and really it was more for education than anything. I've always tried to preach that, you know, you go to college to get an education. Mm-hmm. And so throughout the entire recruiting process, education was always the number one priority for me. And, you know, so even after that, you know, I felt like Georgia was the best opportunity for me as far as an education was concerned. And so that really helped to make the decision clear as to how to proceed.
Wow. Well, that's quite admirable. So you chose to walk on at Georgia over taking a scholarship at Florida because of education. You get to Georgia, sit for a year, split duties in 2016, and perform at a high level, but also a level that left your status as starter in question with some other talented players on the roster at your position. So something happened between 2016 and 2017 in that offseason. What changed that offseason and enabled you to transform from a good college kicker into an NFL prospect and arguably the best college kicker that's ever played at Georgia?
No, I think it was just competition, really.
Yeah.
You know, just I think that you know, Coach Smart always likes to, you know, always likes to preach that competition is going to breed the best guy. You know, you have, you know, healthy competition is going to force guys to bring their A game and to bring their best every single day. And, you know, in that off season, you know, we gave a scholarship to a grad transfer to come in.
Yeah.
And that kind of just kind of lit a fire in me, so to speak, that, you know, it was like, you know, just because you had a decent season doesn't mean that, you know, anything is safe, anything is secure. You have to continue to improve and you have to continue to get better if you want to be the guy for this team. And so that really just kind of, you know, kickstarted me and got me going to work in that off season to just grind and do whatever I could to get better. You know, obviously one of the big things that Coach Mark told me that I needed to improve on, you know, if I was going to be the guy was, kickoffs. You know, that's, you know, I had a low kickoff, touchback percentage.
Yeah.
In my redshirt freshman year in 2016, I think I was only around 36%, maybe 36-37%. And, you know, he's like, you know, this needs to be higher. We want you at least like 70% on touchbacks when we ask for it. You know, we want to consistently give the defense, you know, good starting field position on touchbacks and be able to eliminate dangerous return guys. You know, and so I had to change up my technique on kickoffs a little bit. I changed my approach to kind of correct my swing and just get a more linear downfield swing, and it helped me to be able to more consistently drive the ball. And so that year, you know, I think I was around 73-74% on touchbacks. You know, so I clipped that mark. You know, so that was really good, and then just continued to work on it over the next 2 years. And then also just on field goals, you know, I knew that, you know, the mark that I had in 2016, I think I was 78% maybe. Mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't good enough. You know, Coach Martin told me, you know, we expect you to be at least 80%. And, you know, 78's not, it's not there. You know, it's close, but close isn't good enough, especially mm-hmm. in the NEC when games are tight, playing quality opponents, you know, basically every week when you start your conference schedule, you know, you need to be more accurate. You have to be able to make more kicks, you know, put more points on the board for our team because every single point matters. And so, you know, just had to continue to work and try and get more consistent, more accurate on field goals. You know, if I was going to win the job in the offseason and in camp and be able to be the guy.
Yeah. Well, you touched on this earlier, but you had played your redshirt freshman year, right? And was mm-hmm. not awarded a scholarship. Georgia brings in someone who has not played at Georgia as a transfer, gives them a scholarship while you're still on the roster, which I would imagine, I mean, you said it lit a fire under you. I would imagine that would be irritating. And you were still paying tuition to attend the University of Georgia while you were starting on the team. You ended up winning the job over this player who was on scholarship. And my question for you, Rod, is how close were you to leaving the University of Georgia for a scholarship opportunity elsewhere?
You know, you know, it was, you know, it was just something that I had to kind of, you know, really think about. You know, I don't know. It's difficult to answer.
Sure.
It's a difficult question to answer because I think throughout the entire time that I kind of had a decision to make about what uh-huh. I wanted to do, I think, you know, ultimately education still ended up being what I always came back to. You know, it was my top priority in the recruiting process and why I decided to come to Georgia in the first place. And ultimately, I believe was the biggest deciding factor in why I, you know, stuck it out and why I continued to go to Georgia and, mm-hmm. and, you know, just tough it out and just try and prove myself. I think ultimately was for the education. You know, I want to get into sports journalism and sports broadcast eventually. You know, football is an incredible avenue and an incredible platform to do some things. But at the end of the day, you can't play football forever, you mm-hmm. know? And so I wanted to be able to set myself up for whatever my post football career looks like. And, you know, I want to, you know, I'd love to be on ESPN one day or CBS or NBC, you know, announcing games or, you know, in the studio, doing analysis, you know, and you know, and I felt like Georgia was going to be the best place for me to have an opportunity to do those things when my football days were over. And so ultimately I just wanted to continue with my education regardless of mm-hmm. how things shook out on the field. I wanted to set myself up for success, you know, off the field and in the classroom. And so, you know, I think that really was always kind of something that was in the back of my mind that, you know, that ultimately led me to stick it out with Georgia.
Wow. Well, I know Georgia fans are quite thankful for the quality of education that school provides, the Grady College of Journalism, because it kept you around, and you provided some incredible moments over the course of your career. Obviously, the 2016 Kentucky game winner and the follow-up helmet interview gave birth to kind of your legend, but you followed that up with Notre Dame game winner, the Rose Bowl bomb, your clutch overtime kick in the national championship. What moment, looking back, means the most to you when you look back on your college career?
I don't know. I mean, I had so many incredible moments.
Yeah.
You know, while I was at Georgia, I mean, a lot of them that you just rattled off, you know, at Kentucky in 2016, you know, I think just kind of a stretch of a couple of days with Notre Dame in 2017, obviously, when Coach Mart told me that, you know, I was going on scholarship, like the day before we left to fly up to Indiana for that game and then being able to hit that, that go-ahead game winner late in the game and then announcing to the team in the locker room that I was on scholarship, I think was, you know, an incredible moment. You know, I think the Rose Bowl game, just, you know, the entire game and the whole experience being in California for a week,
yeah.
just getting to see the other side of the country was incredible. You know, playing in the national championship is, you know, for a lot of guys, a once in a lifetime experience, you know, Maybe not even that. So I was incredibly, blessed to be able to play in that game and make that field goal in overtime. That was really an incredible moment. And even in the last 2 years, I think I've just had so many memories. I think about even Texas A&M from this past year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like pouring rain in the first half, and was still able to get the job done and execute at a high level for the team there, and hit the points to become the all-time leading scorer for Georgia in that game. Just so many really good moments. I don't know if I could pick just one.
Yeah, well, that's fair. That is absolutely fair. On the other side of things, it's hard to pick one great moment. What moment would you like to have back, and why is it the two-point conversion pass to Isaac Nauta that would have caused Sanford Stadium to explode had it been completed?
That wasn't a two-point conversion. That was just a field goal.
Oh, it was a fake field goal. Excuse me.
Yeah. When we were playing against Auburn in 2018,
we were up.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, there was, believe it or not, we weren't just trying to, rub it in their faces.
Sure.
There actually was, some strategy that went into the decision-making process. In the event of a blocked kick, blocked kicks a lot of times can turn into scoop and score.
Touchdown.
Going the
yep.
other way.
Yep.
And so at that point in the game, we didn't really want to risk the possibility of that happening. They get a scoop and score, they take it back, they get the momentum, they get an onside kick, and then, if they recover the onside kick, it's fair game and anything can happen at that point. And so we felt like, we might as well, if we run the fake, the worst thing that can happen is an incomplete pass, and then they have the ball right there where we snapped it when we were already very deep in their territory.
Right.
We make the kick. We're good, but then we go hit a kickoff. If for some reason I don't hit a touchback, they have the potential to get a big return. So we figured, we run the fake, and if we get it, then we got a touchdown, and we've really, kind of buried it and put it away at that point. But even if not, the worst that happens, is an incompletion, because I was going to throw it where only our guy could get it.
Right.
So the worst that could happen is an incompletion, and then they have to start with the ball deep in their own territory. So we felt like it was, a good decision to make at the time. And, it would have been incredible. Yeah, I definitely would like to have had that pass back to be able to put it on his inside shoulder instead of on his outside shoulder, so he can just go straight to it and haul it in. I definitely would have liked to have that one back, but there's, definitely some kicks that I would have liked to have had back as well. And, I don't get to do them over again, and so I just have to try and use them to learn and grow and mature and evolve and try and be a better kicker for it going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always been probably what distinguishes the great kickers, not necessarily the leg ability, although that certainly is a factor, but the mental part of the kicking game. What's your process like mentally preparing for these big kicks and coming down off of a miss and getting back up for the next one?
Yeah. I mean, I think, the process doesn't change, regardless of what happens, whether you have a good kick, whether you have a not so good kick, whether your team wins, whether your team loses, regardless of what happens, the process is the exact same, you have your same process that you go through when you come back to the building the next day, in college, you come in on Sunday, and you just come in and you watch your tape and you mm-hmm. take notes and, you dissect from it and analyze whatever you can, so that you can be better going forward. Now, that day for us is going to be Mondays. You come in and you watch your film and you take away what you can take away. And that doesn't change regardless of how the game went. And then, after that, then you come back the day after and, you have to kind of start fresh. Sorry about that.
You're good.
You have to, you just have to start fresh. Going to have to flush everything, flush everything from the past and just focus on doing whatever you can to improve that next day and going forward with the next opponent that you have. So the mental preparation and the physical preparation, needs to be consistent regardless of what the results are. Coach Reich has been, preaching to us lately, not to ride he says not to ride the wave of the results. You know, you can't gauge yourself based on the results, you know, of what's happening. You have to trust that your preparation is going to lead to the results that you want. So, you know, we're trying to, you know, kind of create our successes by establishing good habits with our preparation and our process. And, you know, that can't change based on the results of the game. You know, you can't change based on the results of the kicks. You have to trust and fall back on that preparation. Really sorry. That preparation and that process, and, you know, and just trust and believe that that's going to lead to the results that you want.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Rod, this will be my last. Do you need a moment there? You need some water?
Yeah, give me just a second.
You're good. You're good. No worries.
Sorry about that. Hopefully I'm
I'm good. You're fine. Just making sure. I don't want you to choke out, you know, here. I don't want to be responsible for that. Well, Rod, you clearly have the preparation down. Now you're doing it for the Colts. In Georgia, there's a new breed of bulldog preparing to try to carry on where you left off at the kicker position. What do you know about the kicking situation in Athens at the moment and the kickers that are facing the challenge of following up the leading scorer in Georgia football history?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hope that that's not part of their mindset is trying to be my successor. You know, I hope that the mindset and the mentality is that they're going to, you know, make their own way, and they're going to establish themselves in their own name and their own legacy. You know, I think the extent of my knowledge is probably the extent of your knowledge and any other Georgia fan that, you know, is trying to keep up with all of the, you know, all the tabloids, all the, you know, the local media. That's basically the extent of my knowledge.
Sure.
You know, and from what I last saw, I think Coach Smart had said that, Zirkle and Pod, you know, are kind of the two guys that have, you know, have kind of edged out the rest of the field at this point and are going back and forth for the job. You know, obviously they're both really talented guys, and, you know, I think that a lot of people kind of slept on Pod, you know, Jack Podlesny, but he came in 2 years ago, I think in 2018, you know, and over the last 2 years, you know, I've seen him really develop and, you know, has just, you know, really improved and gotten better. And, you know, obviously is, you know, doing some really good things for them right now, you know, and may end up being the guy, you know, only time will tell, and we'll see. I guess it's this weekend, is it? Is the season opener?
Yep. Arkansas so, you know, weekend.
So, you know, we'll find out soon enough, but yeah, you know, as far as I know, Pod and Zirkle are going back and forth. Obviously they're both, you know, really talented guys and, you know, both are going to be capable of doing the job. So, you know, it just kind of goes back to that healthy competition that Coach Mart has always, you know, preached to us. You know, it's going to breed the best guy for the job. So we'll see who that's going to be in a few days.
Yeah. Well, Rod, man, I really appreciate you taking a moment out of your busy schedule to speak with us. I know my listeners, Georgia fan base, really enjoyed hearing from you. We wish you the absolute best, both in your NFL career, but also you mentioned your interest in working in journalism, broadcast journalism, sports journalism, beyond sports. So, want to let you know that if you ever need an opportunity, I'm happy to make you co-host in waiting for the Savage Pats podcast.
I appreciate that.
Well, I'll let you go. I know you got a meeting to get to, or a session, I guess, to get to over there in Indianapolis. But again, thank you for joining the show. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. You know, I love Dog Nation. Have a whole lot of love for Dog Nation and all the fans that have been supportive of me over the years.
Yeah.
So, you know, love to give back.
All right, y'all. That wraps up this first episode of season 3. But episode 2 is right around the corner, featuring ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh. And that episode will dive into the 2020 season and what to expect from Georgia against Arkansas this weekend. You're not going to want to miss it. Please subscribe. Also, those of you interested in hearing from Mohamed Massaquah should check out Emory University's Fanalytics webinar series. Next Tuesday, Mo Mass is joining Emory sports analytics professor and guru Mike Lewis to tell his incredible story. Register to hear from Mo Mass for free at fanalyticswithmikelewis.com. I will be making an appearance as well. I think this will be great for Georgia fans, particularly those in the business world. I truly appreciate you all tuning in to the Savage Pads podcast. You're welcome anytime. And so is your feedback. Follow the show at Savage Pads on Twitter or Instagram. And please do not hesitate to reach out. This is by the dogs, for the dogs. And until next time, go dogs.